Welcome to the Daily Wrap-Up, a concise show dedicated to bringing you the most relevant independent news as we see it from the last 24 hours.
So I'd like to begin today with a topic that I'm sure everyone has seen is all over independent media. I mean, anyone who's anyone in independent media today is now talking about the social media purge. And it's important to think of a few things as we get into this topic. One, it's definitely an important topic. It is something, as I said, is everywhere. But there's also a lot of other important things going on that's important not to lose sight of in the midst of something that we said was going to happen, something that we knew was going to happen and that we warned was going to happen and indeed is now happening. But it's also important to recognize a few things that we're going to get into here with a couple of articles we're going to look at, one of which is that we should not fall victim to exactly what they want us to do, which is to tumble forward and to preach screaming for someone to do something. Government, come in and save us from this problem they seemingly have created with a solution that they have perfectly lined up and ready. It's important for us to think of all these things as we go through this. And there's a lot of interesting points that seems like even a lot of the independent media are kind of glossing over. And again, as I pointed out, a lot of other news that's falling by the wayside in the discussion of something that is very sensationalized, but is important nonetheless. But again, to realize that none of us should be surprised this is happening. As we've said before, Alex Jones, in my eyes, was a piece in a game, whether he knew it or not, to set this up to happen. But some of the things that we're seeing happen today, in my eyes, are people that do not warrant this kind of censorship whatsoever. Very reputable people, some of them. And ultimately people that don't fall in the same category that what you could call controlled opposition or any number of things you want to level at Alex Jones. But of course, as I pointed out, these are things that we are seeing all over the internet today, talking about the websites being censored, how crazy it is that these people are being taken down, which I agree with in a lot of ways. Most of them, not all of them, really just baffled by the fact that it's happening. It is kind of staggering to see it. But remember how long even the people on these lists have been warning that this was going to come. So for the first article of the day, something that, as always, Caitlin Johnstone doing an excellent job of grasping this even before it gets, as you know, this she put this article out yesterday, right as it was happening. Facebook, Twitter purge, more dissonant media pages in latest escalation. So Facebook has indeed purged these dissident political media pages, as she's calling them, and this time under the pretense of protecting its users from inauthentic activity in their typically vague, undefinable concept that's very objective as it is to what we're talking about. And in a statement co-authored by Facebook head of cybersecurity, Nathaniel Gleicher, who, as she points out, also happens to be the former White House National Security Council Director of Cybersecurity Policy. How interesting. The massive social media platform explained that it has removed 559 pages and 251 total accounts that have consistently, as they say, broken our rules against spam and coordinated inauthentic behavior. Now, of course, this inauthentic behavior, according to Facebook, consists of, quote, using sensational political content, regardless of its political slant, to build an audience and drive traffic to their websites, which is the same as saying they write about controversial topics and posting these political articles in dozens of Facebook groups, often hundreds of times in a short period, to drum up traffic for their websites. As Caitlin writes, in other words, these pages were removed for publishing controversial political content and trying to get people to read it, ultimately. Not for writing fake news, but for doing what they could to get legitimate indie media news stories viewed by people who might not otherwise see it. Now, that's absolutely correct, but we cannot, as I'll get into more in a moment, forget about the fact that some of the people that were purged indeed do spread sensational content for the exact express purpose of gathering traffic. It's important that we don't fall into the trap of blanket statement every single person that's been taken away from this is innocent and the government's censoring. Yes, it's censorship and it's wrong in every possible way, but it does not mean that some of these people were not doing the very thing they're talking about. Does that make it okay? Absolutely not. Censorship is, it's a $0 policy here. We cannot have any kind of censorship as it violates our constitutional rights, even in regard to these companies that, even though they're private companies, as she'll point out at the end of this point, is that as we get so combined with corporate censorship and government censorship and the clear connections between Twitter, Facebook, Google with the government, it's ultimately the same thing. Now, the list in this article is in there for you to check out. Some of the most prominent ones, as I see it, are people like the Free Thought Project, Press for Truth, and in my eyes, the most relevant in regard to this topic is the anti-media. And specifically, the point they make is that there's a simultaneous purge happening between Facebook and Twitter, which is very, very important to understand. This collusion, if you will, to use their interesting term, between these groups to censor people that they have agreed upon, which is a massive organization of a lot of different moving parts. So this is an organized effort here, but not just on either platform of these social media, of these independent media groups, but also simultaneously of their editors. That's a very important point to recognize. Now, again, the major point for me is someone like Carrie Wedler, who I have immense respect for. I don't necessarily know personally. I share her work regularly, but somebody who you can recognize her dedication to the truth and her willingness and absolute dedication, again, to not allowing anything to go out that she does not check meticulously. For her and her outlet, who she is the editor-in-chief of Antimedia, to get wiped away for no reason whatsoever, not given any kind of a justification, is a big deal. Now, that in contrast with some of the other sites that were on there are quite astounding, because some of those other groups are indeed worthy of the name of sensationalism. But as I see it, her and Antimedia, not so much at all. Her specifically, not in any way. And that's what I find to be most important. Now, as Matt Agaris said of the Free Thought Project, what makes this recent purge from Facebook and Twitter so egregious is that the pages like the Free Thought Project, the Antimedia, Press for Truth, and dozens of others did not fit the hate speech narrative these same companies used to wipe out Alex Jones. Instead, these pages were dedicated to spreading peace, bridging the divide, bringing humanity together, and holding government accountable. Now, that's, of course, his perspective on this. I would say there's quite a big difference between the Free Thought Project, Antimedia, and Press for Truth. But that being said, he makes a good point in regard to Alex Jones and what he was to this whole thing and how they used the idea of his aggressive confrontation measures and hate speech to bring him down and what they did with these people. It's quite staggering. And as I said, Caitlin always makes a good point of pointing out, in a corporatist system, which we're in, wherein there is no clear line between corporate power and government power, corporate censorship is government censorship. You can't have a system wherein corporate lobbying and finance and campaign finance amount to legal bribery, as we've said many times, of elected officials, wherein massive Silicon Valley corporations form extensive ties with secretive government agencies in order to eclipse their competition, and then claim this is a matter of private corporations enforcing their own rules on their own private property. This is just what totalitarian government censorship looks like in a corporatist oligarchy. And as Carrie Wedler points out, and just about, as I see it, the only one doing so, some of these pages purged were indeed part of the problem in all of this. And this idea of only anti-establishment voices being purged, while being no doubt part of what we are seeing, is not entirely accurate.
You're probably seeing a lot of reactions to this from the people that it happened to and the people who are supporting them, saying that they're being purged because they have dissenting points of view and because they're anti-establishment. And I do think this is true to an extent. I don't think we can prove to what extent, but I do think it definitely factors in. But there are two issues here. One, left-wing pages are getting purged, and also pro-Trump pages are getting purged. And I know that a lot of you in my audience are very certain that Trump is anti-establishment. I respectfully disagree. I think he's extremely establishment. I don't know that he started off that way, but he's certainly become that. So the argument that anti-establishment pages are getting purged and that's why doesn't hold water for me. But something else I'm hoping people will be mindful of and conscious of is that a lot of the pages that are claiming it's because they're anti-establishment are also extremely irresponsible in the way they report information, if you can call it that. They've built their followings through fear-mongering and sensationalism and being totally just disregarding facts. And it's something that I've tried to call attention to in independent media for a while. I've been in this community a long time, and people don't listen because it gets them traffic. So yes, there is definitely a factor of being anti-establishment and having opposing views and having that be part of the reason people are getting silenced. I absolutely believe that, though, again, we can't quantify how much of a percentage of the reasoning that is. But there's also a bunch of horrible pages that are not accountable for the way they present information, and it's coming back down on them. I just have to put that up there because it's something that's frustrated me for a really long time.
I think
that in general, people need to be more conscious of the information they're consuming. People need to learn how to better interpret news, to check original sources. This is basic stuff that people aren't doing, and it's part of the reason the fake news issue really is a real issue. And yes, it comes from the mainstream media, obviously, but it's also coming from these outlets that are getting purged. And we can't deny that. We can't act like the only reason they're getting purged is that they're anti-establishment. That is absolutely not the case. There's so much horrible information out there, and we need to take responsibility for what we're consuming. But at the same time, I think it's really important that we stand up for people who are getting purged.
Now, that was Carrie Wedler, the editor-in-chief of the Antimedia. As much as many people may not want to hear what she has to say in that regard, it's very important to listen to what she's saying. And it's important for us to be able to question our own perception of things, especially in regard to the idea of the left-right paradigm and the idea that the ultimate point here is that there is no positive concept of censorship in regard to this. Censorship is ultimately never the answer, as Glenn Greenwald recently pointed out in one of his tweets, that this is what happens when people ask for censorship. It ultimately comes back to bite them in the ass. And it's what we've been warning about. And the point that Carrie was making and why it's so important is to recognize the fact that there are people on our side, as we want to perceive it, of the independent media who are contributing to this problem. It doesn't mean they should be censored, and that's the point that people misunderstand. She's not advocating for censorship of any kind, as I'm not either. But we need to recognize and take responsibility for the fact that there are people in this that do the wrong thing. That go out there and sensationalize and lie, even if it's in the right side of things as you may see it, which is the same justification they make on the other side. Well, we're in the moral side of this. We're right. So we'll bend the truth to suit our agenda because we're doing the right thing. It's objective. At the end of the day, as the independent media, as I've said so many times, we must be better than them. And if we allow their game to win, and if we do the same thing they're doing, we're no better than them. To sensationalize the news, to bend the facts, even in the way that we know may be true, as we think may be true, even if we know it's true, to do so without the facts and to do so maliciously in a way is not the right path. But at the end of the day, what's happening today is setting us up for the wrong path. They want us to react to this so they can swing in with their solution, which they've had planned from the very beginning. The solution to this is to use other platforms. I've said it time and time again. To go on and use other things, not necessarily get away from these if you don't want to, but begin using everything else. You'll see a list in the show notes to every other platform that we use, some of them. There's many others that are not even on there. Seek out and find new platforms, branch out, get away from this. Don't ask the government to come in and solve a problem that they are responsible for. It's important to recognize that. Now, in a very related story, almost intricately related, seemingly almost the same exact concept, and maybe even what led to this to begin with. As I understand it, Dan Dix was actually working on a documentary about this topic as he was censored. This coming from Activist Post, entitled "Leaked Google Document Advises to Police Tone Instead of Content in the Shift Towards Censorship." And those are indeed quotes from their information. And this is something I've been talking about for a long time. In regard to the way that, and many of us know this in this circle, as many of us know in regard to just YouTube broadcasting in general, that they now censor people, not content. They censor ideas, not content. They will censor a platform before it even goes live because they know the kind of things they talk about. And they hide that point because that's a violation of their own terms and service. But this now shows us it's exactly what they've been trying to do all along. So another Google document has found its way into the public domain, this time through Breitbart. An 85-page briefing entitled The Good Censor advises tech companies to police tone instead of content and to not take sides when censoring users. And the document, which can be read in full in Breitbart, and as well as the article in the show notes, admits in writing that big Silicon Valley companies, including Google, have shifted toward censoring users, moving away from their original values. Moreover, the mission to create an unmediated marketplace of ideas has become a plan by tech companies to, quote, create well-ordered spaces for safety and civility. Responding to the Breitbart leak, of course, a Google source said the document should be considered internal research and not an official company position, which is what they say to all of these things that have been leaked in the past, which turn out to be quite the opposite. Now, the Google internal research, as they call it, even quotes outside experts like, of course, George Soros, who expressed justification of censorship in non-US markets, noting that Google should police tone instead of content and censor everyone equally, as Breitbart puts it. Now, take that into context in regard to what we just talked about and this idea that they are now segueing into censoring people, which is what we've been saying all along, all of this stuff. And again, going back to the first story, it does not mean that what's happening today is not important. There's much more involved in that story that we could dive in and talk about all day long. But the point is that this is something they want us to be consumed with. And it's just a perfect opportunity for us to begin finding other ways to communicate, which we should have been doing all along. Now, their own information very clearly says we are going to be censoring you based on the way you speak, not about the content you're covering. And that tells us basically all we need to see. Now, moving on to the next story and into some more foreign policy, and this in regard to Israel, of course, and something that is in all these next few stories are increasingly frustrating because it continues to show us the very same thing over and over in a different area, while the U.S. oligarchy continues to ignore this and even stand behind them even stronger. This one entitled, Meet 10 Corporate Giants Helping Israel Massacre Gaza Protesters. And this is something that we should take note of because this gives us a perfect list of people who we should begin, or rather stop using. Any of the corporations on this list, we should take every action we can to no longer support them in any way, shape, or form. That's the best thing we can do. As we always talk about, our only voting power that matters in this country anymore is our consumer power. Vote with your dollars. So, quote, the Israeli military relies on a network of international companies supplying everything from sniper rifles to tear gas to carry out its massacres of protesters in Gaza. This from Tom Anderson, a researcher for Corporate Occupation. He told this to Mint Press News. These companies are knowingly supporting war crimes and are complicit in state-orchestrated murder. Israeli forces have killed 205 Palestinians in Gaza, in the Gaza Strip, which we recently reported on as well. There have been 21,288 people injured, including 5,345 from live ammunition, resulting in 11,180 hospitalizations. 38 of the dead and 4,250 of the wounded were children. And as we recently pointed out, there has been only one Israeli fatality in all of this. Corporate Occupation and the American Friends Service Committee, the Boycott, Divestment, and Sanctions Movement, and WHO Profits maintain a comprehensive list of corporations enabling Israel's crimes against Palestinians. So let's take a look at this, and we'll entertain or go through the list and talk about what some of these things are. And ultimately, let me shape this up real quick. Thought that was squared away. Okay. So we have Caterpillar Inc., which is known for internationally for Israel's use of its bulldozers to demolish Palestinian homes in the occupied West Bank and Israel itself. Now, this is something that's important to recognize because this is a company that is profiting from the demolition of homes of innocent Palestinian people just simply because the Israeli government gives them the go-ahead. And as much as you want to try to justify the idea of profit from companies, the companies that want to make a profit, to profit at the expense of human rights is never okay. The next one is Combined Systems Incorporated. Combined Systems, a Jamestown, Pennsylvania-based manufacturer owned by Point Lookout Capital and the Carlyle Group, supplies light weaponry and security equipment such as tear gas and flash grenades to repressive governments worldwide. somebody we should definitely be aware of and see where and how we can stop allowing this company to profit. Ford Motor Company, which is interesting, knowing that we just talked about how they are struggling due to Trump's tariffs with China. Now, while other manufacturers like General Motors also provide vehicles used by the Israeli army to deploy its soldiers along the Gaza barrier, Fords are distinctive for their creative use. In 2003, Israeli vehicle manufacturer Hatiaf began retrofitting Ford F-550 trucks as armored personal carriers. By 2016, Israel had moved to the F-350s, modified by Israel military electronics company, albeit systems as autonomous unmanned vehicles capable of remotely controlled fire. Definitely profiting. Monsanto, not a big surprise, along with herbicides from Dow Chemical and Adama Agrochemical Solutions, an Israeli unit of China's state-owned National Chemical Corporation, ChemChina, Israel sprays Bayer subsidiary Monsanto's notorious glyphosate, a known carcinogen, which is true, on Palestinian fields across its military barrier with Gaza several times annually, as does its deployment of Caterpillar bulldozers to level the same fields. Of course, Monsanto, we don't need another reason to not be a part of them or not to support them in any way, which is Bayer, by the way. Bayer, today, who bought Monsanto. We need to make sure that we don't support them in any way, shape, or form. G4S PLC, formerly one of Israel's biggest occupation contractors, G4S sold its major Israel subsidiary for G4S Israel in 2016, but kept a stake in its construction and operation of Politicacy. That's weird. Israel's privatized National Police Academy. So somebody that clearly is involved in the entire, everything we're talking about here. Now, of course, all these groups we're talking about are profiting off of the demise and ethnic cleansing of an entire people. But each of them have their different ways they continue to do so. And none of these things should go without acknowledgement, that these companies should not be allowed to be doing these things, knowing the actual war crimes that are being acknowledged by people around the world. Hewlett-Packard, now three companies with interlocking operations, HP Inc., Hewlett-Packard, and DXC Technology, equips the Israeli military with computers and has undertaken contracts to virtualize IDF operations. That sounds like a good thing. HSBC Bank, of course, we don't need any other reason to stop supporting them, but they provide extensive financing to some of the most notorious military manufacturers in the world. Motorola Solutions, encrypted smartphones for the Israeli military. Remington, I guess you could imagine what they do, supplying munitions of all types. And of course, Sabra Dipping Company, the White Plains, New York-based food manufacturer, co-owned by PepsiCo, of all people, and Israeli food marker Strauss, has donated food packages to the Israeli Army Brigade. So obviously some of these groups are not directly involved with the munitions and the direct association with war crimes. But the real takeaway here is that these companies are profiting from supporting the Israeli regime, the false state of Israel. And it's important for us to find ways to not support them in any way, shape, or form. Moving on to the next story, in regard to the same foreign policy idea, this one coming from Syria. Now, this is interesting because this is something I feel shows us a lot of insight into topics that we've been talking about before, but deeper so in regard to the White Helmets, in regard to the situation in Idlib, and just the U.S. backing of all of these different groups in these areas, the extremist groups, I should say. This entitled, ISIS seizes toxic agents intended to be used for provocations in Idlib. Talking about chlorine. So ISIS terrorists have been able to seize toxic chemicals due to the irresponsible actions of the representatives of the Western countries. This according to Lieutenant General Vladimir Savchenko, chief of the Russian Center for the Reconciliation of the Conflicting Sides in Syria, stated on October 10th. Now, of course, coming from the Russians, many people will reflexively dismiss this. But take it as you would anything else, understanding that they have much more validity to their comments than we've seen in roundly from the United States oligarchy, even just in the last so many months, but just generally, as far as I can tell, as they continue to produce facts to support their claims. And we're told by the U.S. oligarchy, trust us, we have secret intelligence that we can't show you. You got to weigh these things as you hear the information, but always take it with a grain of salt. Now, according to Savchenko, on October 9th, a group of ISIS-linked militants attacked the headquarters of Hayat Tahrir al-Sham, which is formerly Jabhat al-Nusra, Al-Qaeda, in the village of Al-Lataminada. He added that four militants and two members of the White Helmets organization, interestingly, were killed in the attack, and two cylinders containing chlorine were taken out of the headquarters. The seized cylinders were transported to southern Aleppo and handed over to members of another terrorist group, Haras al-Din. Now, what's important to think about here is the reality that we've seen the division between Hayat Tahrir al-Sham in the demilitarized zone. People splitting their cause, some of them wanting to stop, some of them wanting to continue, some of them wanting to back down. Interesting now that we're seeing that we see ISIS, which we can relate back to Western factions in general, coming all the way from Al-Qaeda, becoming ISIS, to the groups that have funded and protected them all this time in Syria, verifiably so. And now a new group that's also connected back to Al-Qaeda, coming in and taking these from them. Maybe groups that have decided, well, maybe we don't want to carry this out. Maybe because we're seeing that this isn't working out the way we wanted it to, we're about to be destroyed, maybe we don't want to do this. And also point out the interesting, and this is my opinion, the interesting point of seeing that White Helmets were involved in this somehow. Ask yourself why the White Helmets are still involved in this completely terrorist-held area, as has been acknowledged, even by the mainstream media. A completely terrorist-held area with White Helmets still there helping and participating, even though we know the White Helmets have roundly worked specifically in Al-Qaeda-held territories. But now they were killed involved in this whole thing. I thought it's just interesting how we see them continue to stand out as the terrorist organization that they are. Now, it says, quote, the Western countries, while planning provocations against Syrian government forces and employing their controlled bandit groups, do not take into account the complicated situation in the Idlib de-escalation zone, clearly laying the blame on the U.S. and Western groups for allowing these chemicals to be brought in by their backed factions and now has ended up in the hands of another group, ISIS or Haras al-Din through them. Now, as a result of those irresponsible actions, poisonous chemicals ended up in the hands of Islamic State terrorists, whose actions are hard to predict, this according to the center head that we just recently referenced. And it's interesting to note that Savchenko described Haras al-Din, which is known for its links to al-Qaeda, as an ISIS-associated group. This may indicate that in Idlib, pro-al-Qaeda, pro-ISIS organizations are now working together to sabotage the Idlib demilitarization deal, which is interesting. If you can link all this back to Western-backed factions who did not want the demilitarized zone to begin with. So we have to ask ourselves where all this is stemming from and why the ISIS groups that were supposedly defeated in Syria, as they've claimed, are now rising back up to take the chemicals away from the group that they were basically given to by the Western factions to do what with? Why? Why were the White Helmets there? I mean, there's all these questions we need to be asking ourselves. Ultimately, we have to come to our own conclusions about. But we should not shy away from considering the fact this is just another way to carry out the very false flag that they have been planning for a very long time. Moving on to the next story coming from mintpressnews.com, a very sad story and the final story of the day in regard to Yemen, showing us what's truly going on in Yemen and how they continue to ignore the reality of what the Saudi-led coalition is doing, the U.S.-backed Saudi coalition, despite their egregious lies in front of the world stage. This one entitled, In Latest Yemen Offensive, Saudi Arabia Destroys Hospital and Maternity Ward. Sure sounds like they're doing their best to avoid civilian casualties. And sure they're investigating this to bring these people to justice. Hope you can sense my sarcasm. Saudi Arabia and its allied coalition launched a second major military campaign against the heavily populated cities of Tahita and Drahimi in Yemen's Hodeidah province on Thursday, leaving scores of civilians dead and a major hospital in ruins. The coalition's latest attack comes amid a worsening famine in Yemen that we've been warning about, that's been very clear, and it's due to their blockade of the port. Now, this famine has hit Hodeidah especially hard and has left thousands of families across Yemen without food, forcing some to eat leaf paste that we've talked about, and even their family pets, in an attempt to stave off starvation. Coalition aircraft carried out more than 40 strikes on the area, and the Al-Drahimi General Hospital, which we're talking about, and the adjoining Maternity and Children's Hospital, as well as at least one ambulance that were all struck. Dozens of civilians, including hospital patients, were killed in these attacks. Innocent civilians suffering in the hospital, likely from other attacks from before. A family was also killed on Friday when a coalition airstrike targeted their home, specifically inside the city. Average individual people just trying to survive. Now, according to statements given to Mint Press by local residents and medical sources, and later confirmed by Yemen's Human Rights Ministry, the first airstrikes took place as the wounded visitors and patients and the maternity ward were all inside. All these people, the wounded, the visitors that were at the hospital, the maternity ward were all suffering inside this hospital, and they struck it. Patients wounded in the attack then had to be transferred to the homes of nearby residents. The U.S.-backed Saudi coalition attacks came in the face of demands issued by the United Nations Committee on the Rights of the Child of the the United Nations Committee on the Rights of the Child for the coalition to stop its deadly airstrikes against civilian targets in Yemen. They stand there and bald-faced lie to everyone in the world, saying that they are doing everything in their power to investigate these and minimize civilian casualties as they go out and target a hospital full of pregnant women and disabled. It's the lies are almost too much to overcome. Now, on Thursday, the panel, which includes 18 independent experts, confirmed that Yemeni children were in fact being killed, which you likely all know by now, maimed, and these children, if they're not killed like they were in the bus, all 40 of them, they're maimed, orphaned, and continue to be struck as they come back for their double strikes and come back and attack the very people they just bombed by the U.S.-backed Saudi-led military coalition, adding that the coalition had conducted attacks on civilian targets in Yemen. This coming from the panel, including homes, medical facilities, schools, farms, weddings, and markets, and funerals, by the way, in violation, of course, of international law. It's truly staggering to see how people like Pompeo and Mattis and Trump himself can stand up and vouch for these people. As day after day, I almost endlessly, every day I report, there's a new story of a new civilian compound or buses full of children or women or pregnant women in a hospital being bombed, focused on, targeted by the U.S.-backed Saudi coalition. That's something we have to reconcile with what we're hearing from the U.S. oligarchy. Even discussing the story of the Khashoggi, the Washington Post columnist, which is unnecessarily getting too much attention because he's one person who is part of all kinds of bad things as well, but does highlight the fact that the Saudi Arabian monarchy seems to think it can do whatever it wants, just like the Israeli monarchy. It's not really monarchy, but the authoritarian regime that it is. We have to realize what we're seeing here as the U.S. continues to back down and do absolutely nothing about the most egregious human rights violations, war crimes of our time. Nothing. As they pretend horrifyingly to stand with helping people around the world. It's almost too much to bear. Now, all of this that we're talking about today, from Palestine to Yemen, it all carries on with U.S. support. And specifically in Yemen, even U.S. cover, as they take part in these atrocities and tell the world that the Saudis are doing their best. Well, they're indeed doing their best, but it's their best to inflict the highest amount of suffering on the civilian population, as anyone truly paying attention and thinking for themselves can plainly see. And this is exactly why they want to control the information flow, so people like me lose their ability to reach the average people. This is their greatest fear, as their house of lies comes tumbling down when the most basic of questions is asked. Which is why the bought and paid for mainstream media today will never ask them. They want to be able to tell you what to think, what to eat, what to watch, even what to feel. But remember that the real power truly is in the hands of the majority. And we are the majority, whether we realize it or not. Yet they work day and night to make you feel otherwise. So as they fight to stifle, control, and censor alternative media today, in hopes that we turn to them for the solution they already have lined up, remember what that solution truly looks like. And as always, question everything. Come to your own conclusions. Stay vigilant.
Hi, I'm Fox San Antonio's Jessica Headley.
And I'm Ryan Wolf.
Our greatest responsibility is to serve our Treasure Valley communities.
The El Paso, Las Cruces communities.
Eastern Iowa communities.
Mid-Michigan communities.
We are extremely proud of the quality, balanced journalism that CBS 4 News produces.
But we are concerned about troubling and irresponsible one-sided news stories plaguing our country.
The sharing of biased and false news has become all too common on social media. More alarming, some media outlets publish these same fake stories without checking facts first.
The sharing of biased and false news
has become all too common on social media.
More alarming, some media outlets publish things simply aren't true without checking facts first. Unfortunately, some members of the media use their platforms to push their own personal bias and agenda to control exactly what people think, and this is extremely dangerous to our democracy.
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 This is extremely dangerous to our democracy.